Some say this is the blind and ruthless inevitability of progress. Matrices multiplying, transformers transforming, learning, evolving, accelerating. It promises miracles, whispers threats. Will the revolution be vibe-coded? Forget the hype. What's really happening under the hood? We're finding out. This is the acceleration. Welcome back to The Acceleration, the show where we dig into the tools turning month-long builds into weekend hacks. In this sixth installment of the show, our guest is Alex Gleason, open source trailblazer, creator of the Soapbox engine that went on to power Donald Trump's Truth Social, and for a spell was its head of engineering. Alex then moved on to double down on Freedom Tech, and he hasn't slowed since. He's just launched Stax, an AI-first development platform that lets you spin up full apps in minutes with community-shared templates and a built-in coding assistant. He's also part of the new And Other Stuff Collective, where he and a dream team of Nostr builders are cranking out decentralized AI-powered experiments for activists and everyday users alike. Grab your favorite beverage, because over the next hour, we're diving into the future of social networks, AI-supercharged coding, and why open protocols might be the secret sauce that keeps the internet weird and free. Alex Gleason, welcome to The Acceleration.
Hey, everybody. Amazing intro. Thank you. I'm excited.
Of course. Happy to have you here. So maybe, Alex, for folks who are not familiar with your work, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? How did you first get involved in building social media software and decentralized tech?
I mean, I guess it was a big question about open source, right? I'm thinking about open source and copyright. I was actually making a book, like an illustrated storybook, and I kind of first got introduced to this idea of open source and like thinking about like, oh, should I share this with the world? Well, like, you know, I see all these other people in open source are sharing with the world, and just thinking about like all of the work that's wasted of people, competing companies not sharing shared resources, basically, and thinking like how much further along could we be if we were all working together for towards common goals. And so I became like an open source zealot, and I was looking into open source everything, like open source social media. And then I kind of realized at a certain point that open source social media was one of the most important pieces, because that's the way that we communicate online. And I just think that the internet is so important. And so I got involved in Mastodon. That was a huge inspiration to me, because it was at a time where no one else was really doing open source social media. Now there's just like a flood of not just open source, but huge fragmentation and maybe decentralization, you could call it, in the ecosystem. But yeah, that's where I got my start there. I did stuff building on Mastodon. I ended up creating Soapbox. I worked for Gab for a short period of time, because I liked what they did with their user interface. They forked Mastodon and made it more user friendly. I helped build a site called Spinster on the original version of Soapbox. I was really involved in the Fediverse. There was like a big culture war there. And then there was like all the stuff with the pandemic. I mean, there's such a long history. Eventually I got kind of roped into this stuff with Donald Trump, and I was really hoping that they also were going to join the Fediverse. And so that's why I was so interested in it. And then Nostr kind of came out of nowhere and hit me like a truck. And I'm like, oh shit. Well, if I can't beat him, I may as well join them. And so I jumped ship from the Fediverse over to Nostr, and that's where I've been building ever since.
You famously became, as you mentioned, the head of engineering for Truth Social, the social network set up by President Trump. I believe in 2022 was when you were the head of engineering, where you adapted Soapbox for that venture. What was that experience like, and what did you take away from it?
It was crazy. I mean, it was all very secretive. Like, it felt like we were on this like secret mission. We weren't allowed to tell anyone. Only like my closest family members even knew as it was happening. And for me, it came out of nowhere. I got a call from a guy who was telling me, "Hey, do you know how to put Soapbox on top of Mastodon?" And he was like asking me for help, and he was saying, "I can't tell you what it is, but would you be interested in joining?" And so I took just a leap of faith. And I was surprised when I discovered that it was Donald Trump, and I thought it was like a joke, or like a prank or something. And I continued to think it was a prank, or that there was like some thing that I just didn't understand as it was all happening. And to this day, when I think back on it, it still feels like a dream to me. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of what the experience was like.
Yeah, so leaving that role to go full time into open source must have been quite a big decision. What,
Well,
yeah,
I
go
was
ahead.
already in, I was very heavily involved in open source before, right? So, like, I was doing Soapbox before that. And what I really wanted was sort of me to rub off on them and for them to sort of adopt my, way of looking at the world. I saw it as an opportunity there because they started out forked on Mastodon. So I kind of saw there being a potential alignment there. But it turns out their reasons for being forked from Mastodon were different from my reasons of being interested that they were forked from Mastodon.
Yeah, makes sense. Alex, there is a common perception that, let's set Nostra aside for a second, but some of these other alternative platforms that started gaining some traction in light of, well, going back to President Trump, him being deplatformed in early 2021, in January of 2021, there was Parler, the Gab, Mastodon, what have you. But there is a common perception that a lot of these venues became refuges for incredibly angry and bitter people. Now, on the one hand, you can't blame folks for being upset at being deplatformed or being censored or being canceled, right? But on the other hand, how true is that perception that these alternative platforms sadly end up becoming wastelands for these angry people?
I mean, I think it's alternative and mainstream platforms that do this. Obviously, it's a big problem. Like I've gone back and forth in my head of thinking, is the internet really a good thing? Maybe the primitivists or whatever are right. We should just go live in the woods. And I've actually kind of had this existential crisis a little bit recently. But I've been thinking about how we're still trying to copy Twitter a lot in like all these different platforms, and I've had this revelation lately that that's not the way to go, and that by building new and interesting and fun things, which we can do now because of AI, we're going to see a big shift. And like, people are nostalgic for the old internet. They're nostalgic for MySpace, and those are the experiences that I'm most looking forward to myself building and other people building, and also with my tools I'm building now to empower other people to create things like that in today's world. Because in MySpace, the challenge was to learn CSS so you can customize your profile, and today it's more of like, how do you prompt the AI agent with the right prompt so that it generates the custom profile that you want. And so I think it's just, I think we're going to see a shift towards a different style of social media, where it's less centered on outrage, and it's more just about like, cherishing human creativity. And I think that that's a great use of the internet.
Why do you think that happened, Alex, that between, let's say, 2007, 2008, and then all the way up to now? And maybe you're right, things are changing, but why? I mean, this is more of a group psychology or a collective consciousness question. Why do you think so many people gravitated towards that Twitter-like format for sharing thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, obviously it's been very impactful. It's empowered people a lot. Like, before the internet and Twitter, the only way to get a message out was by like being on radio or TV. And now the listeners are listening to now, this is the alternative to radio, right? And anyone can do it. And so it's given everyone a voice, right? And so it's a question of, is it good that everyone has a voice now? Because there's not a top-down curation of who's allowed to say stuff and put it out there. And I think it's a human problem. I think it's also just like that there are like forces at work or whatever, like conspiracy theory or not, they're like try to manipulate things online. I've leaned towards it being like there being some conspiracies of like, oh, there's these people who are manipulating things and there's like some government agents or something. But then at any time it's ever come to light who it truly is, it's always kids. It's always teenagers who are doing it. And so I find that really interesting. I think that when you're getting mad online, it's best to assume that the person on the other side is a 9 to 11-year-old boy, and I think that helps a lot until proven otherwise.
That is sage advice, Alex. It'll save folks a lot of heartache if they went in with that assumption. So let's double click a little bit into Soapbox itself. In simple terms, especially for our non-technical audience, can you explain what Soapbox is and then why you think it succeeded in powering so many communities?
Absolutely. So Soapbox was kind of, it was created because I wanted to make sites like Mastodon. And on Mastodon is this very cookie cutter sort of website where all of the Mastodon servers are the same. But I've always had this vision of wanting to kind of bring us back closer to MySpace. And so I wanted it to be fully customizable so that like, oh, if you're a feminist community, then your site can be purple. And you can have like a feminist mascot and logo and stuff. And if you're a soccer fan or football, then you can have a sports themed website. People have taken this idea and run with it. But with Soapbox, I created something that's very customizable that allows the community leader to create like a custom brand, custom color scheme, customizable, essentially self-hosted version of Twitter. So they can create their own Twitter for their community and then attract people to it, however it works within their community. And so there's a lot of people using Soapbox. That's how Truth Social found me. Truth Social essentially followed the Soapbox, template of being a platform with a community who wanted to, to create their own website.
And you worked using Soapbox, right, on bridging different decentralized networks, for example, Mostr, Mostr, which connects Nostr and Mastodon users. It's a bridge. Why do you see this interoperability as crucial? Isn't there a case to be made that different communities have different cultures, if you will, right? And maybe it's best to keep them separate and intermingling. So I'll take a maybe I'll give a slightly naive example here. To me, Nostr feels, for the most part, like a happy place, right? And every time I see posts come over the Mostr bridge that get reposted, I'm actually not connected to it for a reason. When I see posts come over from there, they seem very angry. Is there a case to be made that bridging these decentralized communities might not always be a good idea?
I see both sides of it. I really do. And I mean, one way of looking at it though is it's just people. And so there's this question of, well, how much do you want Nostr to grow, right? Because like Nostr has an affluent sort of user base because it's Bitcoin centric, and so you're just gonna get people who maybe are like a little bit more friendly because of that. Whereas like the community on the Fediverse is sort of more of like a normal crowd, and unfortunately with normal people comes all of normal people problems. So I think that it's not something that's exclusive to the Fediverse itself. It's just that the Fediverse has more users. And if Nostr got more users on its own, then it would be the same users. But yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to the question of should we just stop doing computers and go in the woods, which I've pondered very much frequently, but I have hope.
Oh, but maybe there is a middle ground, right? Which is you can have the internet and let people who want the best parts of the internet create their own little island, their own Galt's Gulch, if you will, and live there.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, with Nostr, we have the tools to do that. As you mentioned, you silenced that relay, so.
Yeah. So you have a project called Ditto, which takes an interesting approach, per my understanding. It's a Nostr-based server that's compatible with Mastodon apps, which is, I believe, a little different from the bridge itself, correct? So can you explain Ditto and what problem it's solving for users?
Yeah, so Ditto is just like me trying to adapt the Soapbox methodology to Nostr, because Soapbox was built many years ago originally on ActivityPub, and I thought that it was a really good pattern basically. In the past few months, I've been thinking that kind of everything I had been doing on the technology side of Soapbox and Nostr is starting to be. Or on Ditto is starting to become obsolete just because of AI. And so now I'm kind of with Stacks, I'm reshaping the vision of Nostr and Ditto. But Ditto is kind of just another bridge. It's a bridge in a different way. It's a bridge to bring that experience that I described earlier with Soapbox of people being able to create their like, their site for their ballerina fan club or whatever, their soccer club site, and bring that to Noster.
Yeah, makes sense. And what was the response to bringing those users into Nostrbin from the community or perhaps even the donors themselves, the Nostr donors themselves?
So in with Ditto, I mean, due to the problems that you mentioned with the bridge, we kind of just pivoted to be like, okay, we're gonna just focus on new users. And we're gonna try to just bring people onto Nostr, but I feel like it didn't really work, to be completely honest with you, because I think that times are just different now. I think that Soapbox was really able to kick off on the Fediverse when it did, because we had mass censorship. Like it was before Elon took control of Twitter and renamed it into X. It was during the pandemic when, activity online was at an all-time high. And so we've just kind of been waiting for like that second storm to come, and it kind of just didn't. It feels like we, and not just Soapbox and Ditto, but like on Nostr, that we are like offering something that people just don't want. And that's been very frustrating and disappointing for me. And so now I've been sort of pivoting towards something a little bit new and different that I think people really do want.
This is a great segue, Alex, because the conversation up until now has been the appetizer. This is, of course, an AI podcast. And now we're going to get into the entree, the meat of it. So you recently released Stacks or Get Stacks, right? So why don't you explain, again, in simple terms, what it is and what inspired you to create this AI-first development platform?
Absolutely. So Stacks is AI-driven templates, It's a new software development methodology that is sort of catered to this new age generation of building awesome things with AI. Because I think that the AI just existing, I mean, this like super intelligence in your terminal just completely changes the way that we're going to build software, the way that we're going to build everything. It's one of the most revolutionary things to ever happen to human beings on this planet. And so it's causing us to just rethink how we're doing everything. So Stacks is my proposal of how we build software. And the basic idea is it's an iterative development model where you start with a template and you kind of set the basics out there. Because if you don't have a template and you just have an AI agent in your terminal and you say like, "Hey, build me a Twitter clone on Noster," you're not going to get very far. With Stacks, you start out with a lot of the details being sorted out already. You're like, so our primary stack is called MK Stack. My wife's name is MK. She created a site called Bookster. Bookster, it was vibe coded in like 4 days. It's a Noster site, Goodreads alternative, and that gave me a huge existential crisis. And so I'm like, crap, I need to, rethink everything I'm doing here. And then that kind of brought me into coming up with this new software methodology. Okay, so MK Stack is based on React, ShadCN, Vite as the build tool, Tailwinds. It's very similar to what Lovable is doing. And then we just baked Noster stuff into it also and gave it a really nice context file. And so here's how the development process looks. So you say, build me a site like Twitter on Noster. That's the prompt. And then it has that stack that it starts with. It has the context file, and then it just starts going. And then you look at it and you see what it did wrong, what's not working about it. And then you go back to the template and you make modifications to the template file. And then you say, build me a site like Noster on Twitter. You just repeat the prompts. And through this iterative process of sort of, going back and refining the stack, you end up being able to create something that can, in one prompt, create you that output. But it's not just that we're going in and adding Twitter things in there, okay? Because that's not the only prompt we're doing. We're also saying, build me GitHub on Noster, build me MySpace on Noster, build me geocaching on Noster, build me a virtual pet like Tamagotchi on Noster. And so we're just going down all of these different possibilities, and like literally every passing thought that I have in my head, and I have a lot of them, and I just think, oh, I wish there was a million of me. Oh, I wish I could do so many things. I have so many ideas, and I just couldn't do it before because it was too hard. Now it's easy. Now I can just like have a random thought and type it into the terminal, and it'll produce a result for me.
So, if I'm understanding this correctly, MK Stack, it with each prompt it gets better, and it gets better for meaning the context file or the MCP server,
So
presumably, right?
it doesn't do this
Just
automatically. I have to make it better.
okay, got it. But assuming you continue to do that every time you run into a new use case, other users of MK Stack
Yes.
would benefit from it. Is that fair?
Exactly.
Okay. And I have been playing around with MK Stack for the last couple of days. Now, you also have Stack Agent, which I started using, and that is see, it's called Dork, right? It seems like a fork of Goose. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, Goose was the thing that inspired me the most because it's an AI agent in the terminal, and a lot of people are using Cursor, and I think Cursor is just like a jail, because it's this sort of like middle of the IQ bell curve. I don't know if you've seen the memes where it's like the Jedi wizard on the right of the bell curve, and like the
Sure.
yeah, and like Cursor is like in the middle of the IQ bell curve, I think, and like Goose is on the edges, because it controls the whole computer. You don't necessarily you're not necessarily opening a file and messing around with the file. And I see a distinction between vibe coding and what I call Discord coding too. And Goose is excellent for vibe coding.
So let me ask you, we'll double click on that a little bit. With Cursor and with or any other vibe coding agent, right? Like if you're using GitHub Copilot and in VS Code or CLang and VS Code, you have to manually find a file system MCP server, add that to your list for your code to have access to your directories, right? And it seems like with Goose, in the limited time I played around, and with Dork, your fork of Goose for that matter, it out of the box, it seems to have access to your file system.
Yes, it does. And for the record, Dork is a from the ground up, like from scratch, recreation of what Goose does. So it's not a fork of Goose, but it was heavily, heavily inspired by what Goose does. And it's baked into the stacks command so that when you generate a stack, Dork comes up and he starts helping you with it immediately. And then but you can also run stacks agent in any directory just like you can with Goose. But yeah, one of the reasons I wanted to deviate from Goose is because Goose has global configuration across your whole computer for it, so that like any directory you run Goose in, it's going to have the same configuration. But I want per directory configuration. And so I've created sort of these things that I want to become standards. There's an agent.json file that you can put in any directory, and if you run stacks agent in the directory, it's going to use that file to determine the model of the agent, as well as the MCP servers available to that agent. Another is the file context.md. That one becomes loaded into the system prompt of Stacks agent. And this way, people can collaborate on a code base using the same MCP servers, the same model in a standardized and formalized way without having to go and like reconfigure things in like, your global configuration.
Got it. So I want to go back to the earlier part you said, which is you need to make stacks, with every improvement, right? Iterative improvement, you need to push that. How often does that happen? Or at least how often has that been happening? And is it immediately available to other folks using it, these improvements?
Yes and yes. So let me see my commits here. I feel like I've already done like 10 today. I in the past 24 hours I've done probably like 30 commits to MK Stack. Improvements to it being able to one-shot light and dark themes. Changing the way that the routes are loaded. Oh, I added a content security policy for improved security on the first shot. Just some examples.
Gotcha. Any plans on making it so that? Well, actually, sorry, let's just go back to that for a second. So every time you make improvements, a new user who wants to use that has to upgrade their stacks, correct? Or is it automatically available?
They don't. So the stacks commands, when you run stacks mk stack, that just pulls it straight from Git. Straight from GitLab is where I have it hosted. And so whenever you generate a new project with stacks, it's going to be using the latest version of mk stack. But it,
Oh,
old
excellent.
versions though, like if you've already generated a project, there's no way to, pull in the improvements to the stack. It's better to just start over. Which often is the case for AI-generated code. Like we're in an era now where code is disposable, which is really crazy to think about it. But like the old, and that's sort of what drove me to build a stack, right? Because I don't want to be wasting so much time on code that like I and others perceive as disposable. And so to me, the only code that isn't disposable is the code of the stack itself. Whereas the projects that are generated, like it may be easier to just rebuild, like revive your project every 6 months than it is to go and try to maintain it over the long term.
It is remarkable to think about it that way. It is a new era in software development. Even 3 or 4 years ago, if you ask most people, they'd say, "Well, yeah, the age of any repository of any software stack is what, 2 to 3 years, right? That will be the average
Yep.
age. And now I think it's compressed to a lot less than that.
Yeah. I agree.
Is there any plan, Alex, to because right now it sounds like you have to manually make these updates, right? Which is incredibly valuable, but you're just one person, and you only have 10 fingers to keep hitting the update button. Are there any plans to sort of globally pull improvements from other users as well?
Yeah, so I mean, it's on, GitLab. It's open source. I would love for anyone to contribute to MKStack, but also I feel like I'm good kind of developing MKStack. The thing that I would love other people to do most is to develop their own stacks. And because like MKStack is it's a React thing. React is, has limitations. And also websites are not the only things people can build. Like people still want apps, like native apps. There should be a stack for building, an Android app, and maybe even specialized for a stack to build an Android Nostr app, as well as like, various other, web stacks. One stack that I'm really excited about is I started working on a Game Boy stack. And what this allows people to do is to run like stacks GB stack and then say, make me a game like Space Invaders. And then before you know it, like you have a emulator popped open and you have a functioning video game that runs on real Game Boy hardware. And so I actually took the ROM file and I put it on an EverDrive and I put it into my real Game Boy from 30 years ago, and I turned it on, and Vibe Invaders loaded up, and I'm just, sitting there playing Vibe Invaders on my Game Boy, and thinking like, what the hell? This is crazy. So, there's so many opportunities I feel that are unexplored with just like the stack's software development methodology.
So it might be helpful, Alex, to folks who are still coming up to speed on this, on making the distinction between stacks and MKStack. And because if you go to the Get Stacks Dev website, right, you see multiple stacks. MKStack is one of them,
Yep.
right? So stacks sounds like a protocol, a set of templates by itself, and then you can build specific stacks on top of stacks.
Yep.
Right, so the MKStack is the Nostr specific one, but there can be others. So it'll be helpful, Alex, if you explain the distinction between the two.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, stacks is just the general idea of MKStack. MKStack is one stack. And so it's a template. But Stacks is a website. It's getstacks.dev where you can view all of the stacks that people have created. And Stacks is also a command that you can install on the command line that you can run to generate new projects from any stack. You can generate new projects from MKStack. You can also generate new projects from Game Boy Stack, as well as many others that I haven't thought of before. Oh, here's an interesting one. So I used Goose to create the stacks command initially, and so it's like an AI creating another AI. In the process of that, I extracted the boilerplate code into an AI chat CLI stack. So now I used an AI to create an AI, and now you can use that AI to create more AIs by using the stack for it.
You did the meme earlier, Alex. I want to do another one. It's the guy looking up at a butterfly,
There you go.
and saying, "Is this the singularity?"
Exactly. You get it.
Excellent. So, one other thing on Stacks itself, right? Right now, you can either bring your own API key if you have one,
Yep.
from Anthropic or what have you, or you can use an OpenRouter API key.
Yep.
And as many of us know, OpenRouter has its own set of issues
Absolutely.
today. Well, one of which being, I mean, it's fully KYC, which all the Anthropic and and OpenAI are as well. In fact, OpenAI was making me do a photo verification the other day.
Oh, my God.
For their API.
It's dystopian.
It's absolutely dystopian. You know, OpenRouter is not that far behind. They, in fact, accept cryptos of all kinds, which is unfortunate. But there is an alternative, Routester, which is a no KYC. You pay with eCash. You use the eCash token as the API token,
which is an amazing design.
Amazing design. So, any thoughts about replacing OpenRouter with Routester?
Absolutely, we plan to, and so a lot of things to say about that. Number one, I want to say that I think that the current big tech companies like Facebook and Google and such are on their way out. They're quickly losing their power. And the next big villain of, like, you know, this upcoming decade is going to be the giant AI companies. They're going to replace the position of big tech. And so, you know, OpenAI should be called closed AI. OpenRouter should be called closed router because they're not, you know, what they are presenting themselves to be and absolutely do need to be replaced. The only reason Stax uses OpenRouter is because right now is because it was created like a month ago. which is crazy to say because we've moved so fast in that period of time.
How much time do you need, Alex? Come on, man. How much?
I'm kidding.
It's remarkable.
It's literally on my to-do list today to switch to add. I think the way to do it is just open AI compatible provider, because that's what most, like, Routester is using that, and PPQ is using that, and that's just going to open the door to like anything else. And it seems like that's the way the open source community is going with custom providers, is just mimic the OpenAI API and then you can plug anything in there. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's great. Now, so let's talk about the And Other Stuff Collective.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the right term to use for it. And Other Stuff, to presumably, and for those unfamiliar, Nostr stands for Notes and Other Stuff Transmitted Over Relays. So this is the And Other Stuff, right?
Yep.
Or at least that's what the name was inspired from. Okay, so tell us a little bit about that and what you're setting out to achieve there.
Sure. So I'm just one person in And Other Stuff. There's five pillars, and there's four, you know, main leaders of the project right now. So I can only speak as one person, but the way that I perceive of the organization is it's like Nostr Harry Potter houses. And so, you know, my pillar is communities. And so I'm just like the Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff or however you want to call it. And the idea is the same goal that we've always had with Nostr, which is to create, you know, this thriving decentralized ecosystem. And it's just kind of a different approach about how to accomplish that same goal.
Is it set up, is it actually incorporated as a nonprofit, or is it just five pillars and five people leading those pillars?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, but I honestly don't, because I'm not the one who's had to be responsible for sorting all of this out. I just know that like now we have the pillars have access to funds to where we're going to be able to hire people soon. And that's something that I'm excited for, because yeah, I feel like that's something that we have needed.
Mm-hmm. Now, that makes sense, Alex. I mean, it's classic Bitcoin and Nostr, right? It's it seems chaotic from the outside, but there's a glorious order that you have to look for. So five pillars, each have some funding allocated, each presumably have some kind of loose charter. Right. You don't want these charters to be super prescriptive, because we're building this plane as we're flying it.
We're still sort of figuring things out, too. I mean, the first thing that we created together was Chorus. And we created that together in the mountains in Switzerland, which was just an amazing experience. And that was presented at the Oslo Freedom Forum, led by the HRF this past week. And yeah, it was an amazing experience, and I think we created something really cool. We vibe coded most of it with MK Stack, and I'm just looking forward to, the things that we continue to build.
Yeah, and there was actually, do you want to talk about that a little more, Alex? There was a blog post about this, which you shared maybe yesterday, and if I'm not mistaken, written by your wife.
Met by MK, yeah. MK of MK Stack.
By the famous MK of MK Stack at this point. She was talking about the experience of just something that would have taken months, right, was you were able to get out in a few days. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I kind of developed this whole stacks thing in preparation for this event because I wanted it to be really good. And so I had been, iterating upon MK Stack leading up to this event. And then once we got there, we started out with just a simple prompt of create a NIP72 groups application. It produced something that was workable, but it wasn't, everything we wanted, and we wanted to do a lot more with it. And so, but it was so great that, it felt like such a huge amount of it was already worked out up front from the very beginning, because we were able to just do so much in that one single prompt. And so from that point on, it was just like, okay, well, what do we want to add? Like, what do we want the user experience to be? And that allowed us to really focus on what we wanted the outcome to be rather than fighting with the tools the entire time, which is what, I think if we were to do a hackathon like this 4 years ago, then it absolutely would have just been days of fighting with the tools and not being able to get anything done, and like arguing probably about what it is that we want the whole time. But no, it was easy. It was great. It was amazing. So we produced a functioning groups app. There is it was a great test of MK Stack. It also showed some of the limitations. I learned so much from it, and I made many updates to MK Stack itself, and there are still things about it that I want to bake into the stack that came out of that are just on my like giant to-do list now. One of them being to incorporate the Cashew wallet that Callie created in there, which that one was a combination of vibe coding and Discord coding, like many of the harder Nostra specific features are, because the robot just doesn't necessarily know how to do that in a correct way, because there's complexity there. And so when I say Discord coding, I mean when you have to open the text editor and go into the jail, but you know that you're doing this on purpose. You're like, hold my beer, I'm going in, that kind of thing. And so we start out by kind of, can you help me with the design of this, and then go and fill in the data.
Yeah, just a quick comment on going into the jail. One of the issues I've struggled with vibe, well, the sort of straddling vibe coding and Discord coding up until this point is so much of it tends to be in TypeScript, which is one of the worst language in my mind, one of the worst anything JavaScript related is feels so painful to me. And I wish if it had been something like Python or something more intuitive by default, it would have been a lot
So
easier,
I have
I
two
think.
things to say about that. The first is, hey, we're waiting for you to build your stack. Where's the Python stack? Somebody should build the Python stack. And then the second to say about it is that I perceive JavaScript as being like the English of programming languages. And that's why I gravitate towards it personally. Is like, I know that JavaScript is not the best language. English is also not the best language, but if it's not your first language, it's probably your second language, because it's the language of the web, it's the language of web browsers. So if you want it to run anywhere, and you also want just about anyone to be able to look at it and understand it, it's probably a good bet.
I reluctantly agree with that, Alex. It's painful as that is. The reason I say this is I don't write too much code anymore, but I started off with C++, C# for a bit, then Python, and then fell in love with category theory and Haskell. And that it, unfortunately, doing Haskell converts you into a complete snob when it comes to anything else. So let's talk about the future of stacks and MK stack. And maybe we'll do it in a fun way. Where do you see stacks, the stacks protocol in general, and MK stacks in 1 month, by the end of this year, end of 2025, and end of 2026?
Great question. So lately, and when I say lately, I mean within like the past 24 hours, because that's how fast things are moving. I've been thinking that maybe I jumped the gun on stacks, and the MK stack is maybe where more energy should be focused, because I'm thinking like there's things that I've been thinking about MK stack itself that it needs, that like maybe it doesn't make sense to try to force it into the stacks model. It's something that just MK stack should have. So for example, one of the big things I want to do is have a web UI where people can go log in with Noster, and then there's like a chat UI there where you can directly talk to Dork. And you can say, hey, I want a Noster website that does XYZ, and you don't need to use it through a terminal, because I do think that's a barrier for people. And then we can have like an artifact, sidebar, where it can show you, here's a preview of the Noster client that we've just generated, similar to what Lovable does. But, Lovable is stuck on this old internet model where they're stuck with like SUPA base, and that's just so lame. Whereas with MK stack, we can have something that just instantly works on a decentralized social network. And that's the beauty and power of Noster. And that's the thing that I really want to emphasize with stacks and with MK stack.
As a Noster enthusiast and a Noster lover, I should say, I would greatly appreciate that. I'd love to see how I can contribute as well, because this whole self-improvement mechanism is really fantastic, because eventually you're going to have something that you just whisper some Noster thing into it, and it'll spit it out in a second. And
exactly,
I've tried building Noster clients on Replit, and basically that. All that involves is watching my life savings drain away in front of my eyes, right? All those Replit checkpoints. So I think this sort of tool is much needed. But getting back to like the broader question, right? So where do you see stacks, MK stack in 1 month, end of the year, end of next year?
It's hard to know to be able to mark literal landmarks like that. I don't think that 1 month ago I could have anticipated what this month looked like. I'm hoping that in 6 months that we have this sort of web UI for MK stack. I think in 1 month we have a lot more apps that are built on Noster because of MK stack. And in 1 year, I hope that Noster will be just like taking the web by storm, because the combination of AI with MK stack and Noster is something that nothing else can do. Because yeah, you can use AI to generate, platforms, but can people log into them? Can people like participate socially with others on these platforms? And just like the permissionless decentralized nature of Noster, it makes it so easy to use AI to combine with it to just build these experiences and in one shot. So I think that's going to be extremely powerful, and I think it could change the web. I think that this is Noster's biggest chance ever.
Yeah. Why do you so as someone who's worked on other decentralized protocols like Mastodon or ActivityPub, and then your work with Soapbox, what is it about Noster that's kept you here and and I guess, what is it about Nostr that's keeping you here?
I mean, I just I think that it's our best chance at this point. Like, I had to leave the Fediverse because I just felt like it wasn't ultimately going to be the thing that wins, and I still don't, which is sad to say, but like it's just too hard to do it. Like, it's riddled with security holes because of the complexity of building on it. And like, I really loved what I built on it, but it just seemed like there's so many barriers, and what I ultimately want is to lower the barriers as far as humanly possible. And with Blue Sky, they didn't really help with lowering those barriers. And so it kind of raises the question of what does it mean to be decentralized? And I think that if it's to be decentralized, people need to be able to participate in the network in a meaningful way. And Nostr is the only social protocol that I've found that people are actually significantly using that allows people to participate in a meaningful way. And with AI, it's going to just allow that to be 10 times more.
And this podcast is called The Acceleration, so I have to ask you this. You're literally accelerating app creation with AI. How do you feel about the pace of AI development itself? Is it hard to keep up, for example, with the new model releases, with all the tools that are out there, and how do you decide what to incorporate and experiment with?
I have felt very mixed about it, not necessarily because it's hard to keep up, but more just a general concern that like the robots are going to kill us. I felt like I was very behind on it 3 months ago, and I have been sprinting to try to get back into the front of it. Now I'm kind of feeling like things are okay now. I'm kind of feel like I've caught up a little bit. I still wonder, behind closed doors, are there like secrets that OpenAI isn't telling us, that they're going to flip a switch and then the whole world is going to change and no one will have been prepared for it? Maybe. And in terms of the robots killing us, like, I've thought about that one a lot and felt such a great deal of existential dread. And then I kind of just got over it. And it was just like, well, I'm an optimistic person. I'm not just gonna, go around being negative all the time. And once I realized that, like, how fun some of the stuff that we're working on is right now, then I'm just like, okay, well, I can't necessarily fix the world, but like, one of my people who's working with me, it has built Treasures.2, which is a Nostr geocaching app, and I feel like this, like, any dread that I feel about, like, internet outrage and stuff goes away when I think about this, because now we've created an opportunity for people to go outside again and to have fun outside in the world. And to me, that's the greatest thing.
I think one of the most underrated things about Nostr, and I wish people actually spread this when they're trying to evangelize the protocol, right? Most of the time it's about censorship resistance and owning your identity and all of that stuff. But honestly, Alex, I think Nostr is the most fun place on the internet. The happy people here, for the most part, of course, you
Yes.
get your edge cases, but for the most part, a happy and a fun place.
I agree. I think that we need to focus on easy. For so long as I've been building stuff, everything has been hard. And with AI, things are becoming easy. And now we need to get out of the mindset of hard and into the mindset of easy, and that's how things really become fun. And I think that part of why Nostr is fun too is because it's easy.
For sure. Let's go back to something you mentioned a little while earlier, or actually, it's been a recurring theme, which is OpenAI and all of these large companies, right? They have super powerful closed models. And who knows, like to your point, OpenAI, right now we're using o3, their latest model, which is just mind-bogglingly good when it comes to certain things. And rumor has it that they're sitting on o4, which they haven't released yet, which might do. Maybe they're not releasing it yet for good reason. But in any event, they have these super powerful closed source models. How do you, you know, as someone who's building in the open, right, these tools in the open, how do you feel about the source, the state of open source LLMs? Do you think they're catching up?
No, it's a sad, sorry state of open source LLMs. I'm sorry to say. Like, I feel like someone really needs to do something on that. And what we're like relying on DeepSeek as our like Lord and Savior here, the one that refuses to say what happened at Tiananmen Square. So that concerns me for sure. We and like I wish I could step in and solve this problem myself, but I can't do everything, guys. So like, you know, I've tried training a model on my machine, and my cores all just max out to 100%. If anyone out there like is listening, train an open source model and release it, please. We need it.
If only there was a way of converting Bitcoin ASICs into, I guess, machines that could singularly train AI models. I guess
now that would be interesting.
AI ASICs, if you will. I mean, ultimately, what are they doing? They're just doing tensor algebra, right? So single throw.
Well, we need researchers, researchers too, to be kind of, you know, gathering the data and running it on the hardware. So it's a combination of things. A lot of resources are needed to do it.
Yeah. You mentioned DeepSeek R1, which certainly has its own issues. Now, you know, the main one being it's basically from the CCP, right? Or certainly controlled by the CCP. There are people who are hosting it in the US. They've taken it, they've adjusted the weights, and they're running it on US infrastructure. So there are sort of non-censored versions of it out there. There's Mistral, there's Qwen, actually Llama itself, even though it's from Meta, it is open source, right? And people have built better models on top of Llama. But despite all of that, you're still not that optimistic about open source catching up with some of these proprietary models?
I mean, it just is so far behind. Like DeepSeek R1, that's supposed to be the premier one, right? Am I wrong about that? Is there a better one than that?
Open source, but the Llama 4, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the latest open source one. That's supposed to be good.
All right.
Yeah,
I'll give it a try, but you know, just based on my experience with DeepSeek, it just left me feeling like no, like we're not even close. You know, it's maybe can kind of do some stuff that we want to do, but it's a rat race. It's the same rat race that we've always had with proprietary software and open source, but now. Like it's just different targets, right? Like I was saying earlier, Facebook and Google are on their way out. Now we can create Facebook in 4 days with vibe coding. Mm-hmm. But what we can't do is create an AI model. So, you know, that's the new sort of power struggle.
Yep. So Alex, of all the AI models you've used so far, has there been one recently which you've used and you had that, oh, wow, AGI is almost here moment?
Oh, I think hot take, AGI is already here. Like I've heard the arguments 2 and 4, right? And at first I'm like, no, that's crazy. It can't be that we have like, you know, AGI yet. And I know that according to researchers, we don't have AGI because there's like a specific checklist, right? That has to happen before we have that. But I think what's going to happen is it's going to be like the boiling the frog. And in a few years, some research is going to go, oh my God, AGI is here. All of the checks on the checklist have been met. Mm-hmm. And the people are going to just respond with like crickets, and they're going to be like, yeah. So I think that the model, here's the way I perceive it. I have two theories of LLMs. Okay. The first is that LLM is a super intelligent baby. What it lacks is wisdom. You provide it wisdom with context. The second theory is that an LLM is the Tin Man. It has a brain, and what it lacks is a heart. You provide it the heart through tools. And so I think that the LLM part is already fully complete. I don't think it really needs to get any better. And so actually, this is a good point because maybe this gives hope to open source models. If open source models can get just as good as Claude 3.7, in terms of their ability to code and use tools, then I think that we'll be in a good place. Because what's missing most at this point is not the brain. What's missing is the heart. And the heart is all of the tools and stuff that you build around the brain to utilize it in new and interesting ways, to give it a body. And with Stacks, something I'm doing is giving it a body, one kind of body. It's interesting also to think about androids, which androids absolutely are going to be real. But yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, well, maybe Nosta via Stacks becomes the body, for all we know.
Yep.
But have you had a scary moment where the AI did something that just completely blew your mind?
I mean, I'm almost desensitized to it at this point, as I am with like United States school shootings. And I feel like that's how a lot of people feel about AI at this point, is like you try to tell someone like AI is fucking sentient, and they're just like they forgot that 5 years ago this was science fiction.
Right.
And yeah, I feel the same. Like I've already forgotten that 5 years ago this we would have thought this was impossible.
So, what excites you most about the future you're helping shape?
Definitely just people being in control. People being able to create new and amazing experiences that they've always wanted to create and maybe felt like they couldn't create. Like, I think that we're going to see a big explosion. There's going to be a renaissance. And I think it's going to be a great time period. Like, I was really concerned at first that like, oh no, we're going to lose all of our jobs. But I think like good, because like what's going to happen is it's just going to be easier to live because you're going to have to do less to do work. People are still going to hire. They're just going to hire you to be a vibe coder instead of to have to be slaving away at a computer doing really hard work all the time.
I've got a meme for you. Another one. Third one of the show,
All
Alan.
right.
You know the one in the bus where it's the two guys, one on the
Yeah, yeah,
left.
yeah.
So the one on the left side of the bus, left as you're looking at the image, is looking out forlornly from the window and saying, AI is going to steal my job.
Yep.
And the one on the right, is looking out at a bright sunny day saying, AI is going to take my job.
Exactly. There you go. You got it. Yep. That's exactly my point.
Excellent.
Couldn't have said it better.
All right. So, any advice for listeners who are developers or just enthusiasts and want to get involved in the space, whether it's contributing to the broader open source space, experimenting on Nosta or with Stacks?
Well, I definitely want you to use MKStack. If you're interested in Noster, you have just ideas you want to build, try it. But also just generally, if you have ever had an idea about building something and you just felt like it was too hard to do it, now is the best time to try again. Because the tools are there. And I feel like people are just like deaf to this for some reason. They're not realizing that we actually can do all of this now. I feel like I'm like screaming into the void and no one is listening. So, thank you for giving me a platform to say this. Try it. It might just work.
Excellent. Well, you heard it here, folks, and I will have everything in the show notes. Start using Stacks, especially start using MKStack. I've used it. I'm not, I haven't written real code in the last 7 or 8 years, and I've already deployed a mini app on it. It took me about 4 hours to get to. So it's a lot of fun. Do give it a shot. Alex, appreciate you taking the time, enlightening us. Best of luck with Stacks, MK Stack, everything else you're working on with, and other stuff. I'm certainly rooting for you, and looking forward to seeing you succeed.
Thank you so much. Amazing conversation, and thank you again for having me, Abby.